This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Our guest today is a lady called Nicola Withycombe, and she runs Kids Come First, which is offering a lot of help for children during a very stressful time of separation and divorce of their parents. So welcome to the studio, Nicola. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be able to talk today.
Now, I was looking at some of the statistics on your website, and it's saying that almost half of the divorces occur in the first 10 years of marriage, which would insinuate that a lot of children are very, very young when they experience this trauma. Is that true?
Absolutely. Typically these days we find that separating couples have at least one or more child aged around the 7 to 9 years old. And we're also finding increasingly a number of parents with infants, babies and infants. So it does have a very wide, is a very sort of wide age group. I think, you know, perhaps 10 years ago it used to be an average of, say, 14, 15, 16-year-olds, but let's say it's about 7 years old these days, which, of course, is a very impressionable age for any child to experience the kind of emotional trauma they do. And they embark on a difficult journey of their own along with their parents going through divorce and separation.
Now, is it the same for children who are with parents who've never married? Is it actually the divorce process which upsets children, or is it the same sort of upset when they've just been living together and just decide to part?
Well, yeah, as you rightly point out, these days family scenarios vary so greatly. You could have, there's been a definite increase, for example, in what they call the silver splitters, people separating in later in life, mainly due to sort of the empty nest syndrome. But most parents, as you point out, seem to separate within sort of the first 10 years. Children are then affected in very different ways. The family scenario doesn't have to be one where they've been married for 40 years. These days, of course, many parents never even cohabit. Cohabitation has gone up massively by about 40% over the last few years. And we still have about 120,000 divorces a year, so around about 100,000 children affected by the process of divorce and separation.
So what gave you the idea of setting up Kids Come First?
Well, I sort of fell into mediation about 6 years ago, coming from a corporate background, and went through a relationship breakdown of my own. Although I don't have any children, I have been an adult teacher of a program for CAFCAS, which is a child advisory service, for the last 5 years. And we deal with lots of parents who are coming through the family courts. Of course, that's when things have got very acrimonious and children are really emotionally feeling the impact of their parents actually battling through the courts about them. So partly because of that, and partly because I feel so passionately about mediation and the power of communication, that I decided that I needed to launch a project that provided earlier intervention therapy that could guide parents through the early stages and the various stages of the separation process and help them cope. The reason why we decided to call it Kids Come First is because we feel that by helping parents cope, we are helping children. By allowing them to be the best parents they can be, they then in turn indirectly help their children as much as possible through the stages.
So how do you help the parents?
Oh, we have a four-hour program of material that we've sort of packed in so much material into. We started writing it at the beginning of last year, and lots of visual slides, etc., lots of handouts. We cover so many different kinds of topics, but basically, to be clear, we look at lots of different ages of children and give an idea of their behaviour and responses so that parents can sort of identify what to look out for and how to deal with those things. But we talk about all the emotional and parental side of separation and divorce, so the loss cycle and the stress brain, conflict and how you can resolve that, different parenting styles and flexibility that needs to be built into future co-parenting, everything including parental love, how you explain that to your children and introducing new partners. And then really importantly, we give parents the right kind of guidance and advice as to what they can expect through the process, how mediation can really help, and the potential pitfalls of ending up in the family courts.
Yes, so do you try and tell them how much better it would be not to end up in the family court?
Absolutely. One of our main missions in launching this project was to try and keep parents out of court and protect their children from the emotional battles. As I say, both myself and my colleague, the co-founder, who is a family therapist and child counsellor, we both have extensive experience of dealing with parents who are coming through the family courts, and it's their feedback and all the wealth of knowledge and experience that we've gained from them over the years that made us think that we had to do something to try and prevent parents from actually ending up in the family courts.
Because it's always such a difficult thing over custody, isn't that? Isn't there?
Absolutely. You know, child contact matters. They can really sort of escalate. And it all stems from the sort of emotional process of being, you know, having a dramatic time change that you have to adapt to. So it's kind of the whole family solar system gets thrown off course, and that's why parents need the right kind of support really early on in taking care of themselves. The whole emotional roller coaster overwhelms parents, and the sort of first panic, I suppose, response of fight or flight is to rush off to your family solicitor. Mm. And then potentially it's the combative sort of nature of our system pits parents sort of against each other. I always like to describe it as once you reach that, you know, situation already where communication is breaking down and parental mistrust sets in, that's when things can get really out of hand and possibly end up in the family courts unwittingly, surely, you know, because conflict tends to escalate. But this is where, you know, it has the most profound effect on children. It's not parents splitting up. I think the recent survey showed that 82% of children said that they had no problem with their parents splitting up. It's all the conflict
really?
That they have to deal with in the relationship and beyond the relationship
yes.
that has the most, you know, profound effect.
And of course, money has a big role to play. I mean, there's
financial.
A lot of high-profile cases in the papers recently about women taking their husbands to court because
sure.
they wanted to get millions,
yep.
you know, and they really didn't care, I don't think, about the children. Well, that's the impression one got from reading the story.
Right. It's easy in the context of, you know, all the emotional trauma to lose focus. And that's, again, another sort of primary objective that we have is to take, you know, get parents in a sort of a person-centered surrounding where they can refocus and get new perspectives because, yes, very often they have lost focus on what's really important, and that is children. And when the whole experience becomes acrimonious, then, and sadly, children do get caught in the middle and, you know, I hate to say it, but they get used in a sort of a, you know, chess game as pawns.
Mm-hmm.
And their greatest assets then become something that it becomes the center of the battle. So, yes, I think, you know, financially things are very difficult when parents split up these days. If they are living together, many parents have to stay for financial reasons under the same roof while they're trying to sort out all the financial aspects of separation. But again, this is where mediation really can step in and help sort all these things out. A lot of people seem to think that, you know, they need to go to a family solicitor to sort all of these things out, but actually you can reach a lot of agreements in mediation and then take them to a family solicitor and have them made into legally binding documents. Saying that, a lot of, you know, there is a scenario through all the emotional experiences where sometimes parents do have to try mediation more than once because when you've got two different people in two different sort of stages of the emotional cycle, one may be stuck in the angry stage and the other one sort of moved through it all in acceptance. Very often, even with a mediator facilitating the discussions, it doesn't always work the first time round.
Do you advise parents to share how they're feeling with children? And if so, at what age would a child be able to understand maybe what its mother or father was feeling?
Children definitely want to know what's happening during separation. That message comes through really strongly, and a lot of children actually tend to feel quite unheard during the process. So it is important that they know what's happening. And of course, most vitally, they need to know that parents are still working and talking together about the things that affect them mostly. Where that's not happening and they see that communication has broken down, there is obviously a danger of children actually sort of getting into risky situations, especially teenagers, that kind of thing. Yes, I do recommend information sharing. Having said that, information sharing must be age appropriate, and I think less is more. Children are always trying to sort of sift out the truth, and very, very often, you know, when you split up from someone, there are two different versions, as we say, two sides to every story. There needs to be some kind of cohesion as to what you say to children, needs to be age appropriate and carefully thought out so that it doesn't impact on them, because children worry about you when you split up, and they like to sort of protect you. Of course, why wouldn't they? What they really want to do is just to love and be close to both of you. So they need a lot of reassurance. I guess that's the main message that needs to come across, is reassurance that you're trying to work things out and that, you know, things have changed, but it's all going to be okay.
If there's a particular reason for your marriage breaking up, say like domestic violence or something, should a child know about this, or is this going to jeopardise their future relationship with the parent?
Again, I think less is more. Lots of those kinds of what we call inappropriate oversharing can lead to, you know, consequences, future consequences for children growing up. And I don't think even a child, you know, late 18 years old, really wants to hear the causes, such as infidelity, those kind of things, addictions, that sort of information sharing. Why would you? And yes, I think it can have an impact on the child's relationship with that parent. It's kind of adversely influences, I guess.
I mean, does domestic violence, though, take a different course, though, to something else, like you just don't get on? Because a child might be worried if it knew that, you know, your husband was beating you up or something.
Well, of course, I mean, children always want to protect both of their parents. Mm-hmm. And certainly when it comes to divorce and separation, there is obviously a different stance for going through. Whilst I say, you know, that all the things I say about the family courts, it's actually just to raise awareness. There are obviously reasons why the family court can work for people who are going through particular scenarios. And, you know, perhaps 2 out of 10 of many parents sitting in groups that I present to sometimes will say that they think the court's been really helpful, but 80% will say that if they found the experience very draining and unhelpful. And I think we have to put it in perspective.
Sure.
Family court judges, they're not the best sort of decision makers for you and your family.
If I can just jump in there. So how much do the workshops cost then, if people want to go on them?
We charge a not-for-profit fee because we're a community interest company. So we charge £95 per parent.
Uh-huh.
And that is for the full 4-hour course, which is split into 2-hour sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And we run our sessions so that we can allow sort of working parents. So it's usually evenings or Saturday mornings, that sort of thing. So parents don't interrupt their work schedules.
But you're also looking for donations, I believe, because you're a not-for-profit organisation.
Of course we are. You know, we don't have a budget for even local, you know, small advertising or any of those things at the moment. And what concerns me most is, you know, we can sustain ourselves in some ways by sort of just giving and fundraising. And we have done. We've given 4 free places away to parents this year. But what I'm really what concerns me the most is that there are a lot of parents out there who can't even afford that modest fee, so we're looking for individuals or companies who might be willing to sponsor a parent to come along.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a desperate need and a total lack of support out there for this this process.
And if anybody feels a bit embarrassed maybe talking in groups with other people, is there a chance for them to talk to you on a one-to-one basis?
Yes, of course. They just need to send us an email and we can facilitate whatever the needs are. We'd like to try and work with everything that comes our way. The whole purpose of launching this project is to make a difference socially. So you know, whatever that takes. I think my take would be to try and help that person, perhaps with a one-to-one short session, and then see whether you can fit, you know, them into a group and help them feel comfortable. Because it's sharing experiences that works really well for people going through divorce and separation as well.
So how many people tend to be in a group then that you would hold?
We like to get about six people. We find that's a nice, comfortable number. And we also try to make it gender balanced, but of course what you want and what you get is not always.
Do any people come along as couples?
Not at this stage. We find it preferable for couples to come separately. We like them to come as fairly close together as possible in terms of the workshop timing, but we think it's better if they both sort of hear the same material, same training course, but at different times. And then they can go away and reflect on that individually and also with a view to how they can sort of move forward into co-parenting, improving their co-parenting relationships.
So would you like to tell listeners about your contact details, just in case they are experiencing difficulties and would like to get in touch?
Of course I would. I'd love to. So we do have a website, and it's kidscomefirstuk.co.uk. Our email address is kidscomefirstuk@mail.com. And those are the two ways that you can get hold of us. We're also on Twitter. I'm always on social media. And that's also kidscomefirstuk is our Twitter.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Nicola, for coming in and telling us about it.
Thank you so much.
Something that's going to be of great use to both children and their parents.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklands.com.